You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Roto Experts in the Morning is on now.
Here we go. Back on the Roto Experts in the Morning for hour number two. Scott Angle, the king. Corey Parson, the exec. Tony Scott and myself, Greg Sussman, here with you. Plus the NBA stuff. They're getting a little baseball. Tony's got a draft coming up. Scott's excited about baseball season. You'll hear me a little bit later on. Before we get into the baseball, let's talk to you at 844-843-6879, 844-843-6879. Kenny in Philly, what's going on, my man?
How you doing, boy?
What's poppin'?
What up? Y'all said the big N word, so I had to call in. The NASCAR word, not the other N word.
Is there a drop button?
I'm about to say, who said that?
I thought y'all were going to laugh by that. Hey, Scotty, man, is ready for Daytona, man. Are y'all having a segment or something on NASCAR? What's the situation with that? You guys getting that together?
Yeah, my son and I will be broadcasting the Father and Son Fantasy NASCAR Hour again, starting the first week in February here on Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and we'll probably have a listener league again.
Oh, okay.
Nice. Sounds good. Hey, Corbin, I think you're wrong about them ratings, man, because NASCAR started at a time like when there's only baseball and like college basketball on, so the ratings are probably going to be a little bit more than you think. As a matter of fact, me and my coworker, we're getting together to try to go to Talladega this year. One of the Talladega.
Nice.
Really? Be careful.
We want to go to a race this year, me and my family. Talladega would be like top of the list.
Yeah. Definitely. So, hey, Tony, your boy Spencer Hawes.
What's that again?
Hey, Tony, your boy Spencer Hawes, man. I didn't have him last night. He put up a big night. And I had Herbert, and I didn't have Herbert last week, and I had Spencer Hawes, and the opposite happened. Your boy, man.
Yeah, Herbert had one good game this year, and it was a couple weeks ago. I remember that. Yeah, anytime you see one of those front court guys out and Hawes gets 20 minutes a game, he'll be able to he'll get four or five times that salary easily because he just loves to shoot, and he's one of those guys. Those guys don't defend anyone. They just shoot the ball. It's the center position, so he's not a bad play out there. What about Watkins Glen? How come nobody's excited about going there?
Because it's a road course. Yeah,
nobody likes the right turns, man.
Yeah, those road courses are like, it's not good viewing because, like, you know, you don't get to see a lot of the race.
It was a shame what happened to Larson last year on that final stretch of Watkins Glen.
Yeah.
When he crashed.
Yeah, people don't like watching the road courses on TV. It's even worse in person.
Wow. Hey, Kenny, 45 is coming. 45 is coming to Philly today?
Oh, Jesus. Yes, sir. He's coming in. I put a post on my page that everybody better act accordingly. Choose your own battles. They only have a couple blocks downtown all blocked off or whatever. So they're getting ready.
Yeah. Are they looking for? Is that Philadelphia very popular with Masons? Is that why he's going there?
I have no clue. I know you're gonna be meeting with a few public officials and. That's pretty much it. But I work at the airport, so I'm trying to get out. I'm trying to get out of work before you get here, before the traffic and stuff get crazy around here. So
yeah, I feel you on that.
It's gonna be ridiculous. So hopefully everything goes smoothly. We'll see what happens. But I can't wait for NASCAR, man. Can't wait for NASCAR.
All right, Kevin. We'll be talking to you guys.
Same.
So I did some research quickly.
While Please we not were, on NASCAR.
No. While we were talking to Kenny, what was the 2016's most watched sporting event that was not an NFL game?
That was not an NFL game.
The NCAA championship.
No, it was not the NCAA championship.
LeBron versus Curry, Game 7.
It was Game 7 of the NBA Finals.
You're welcome.
Then it was Alabama Clemson in the national championship.
Alabama Clemson won.
Yeah, Alabama Clemson won the national championship. Then it was game six. Then it was game five. Then it was game one.
It's crazy. You haven't mentioned the World Series yet, have you?
I'm up to 20. 20 was Villanova UNC, right?
Where's the World Series?
There is not a single game of the World Series.
That doesn't make sense.
With the Cubs?
It doesn't make sense. The Cubs, it was very highly rated, especially game seven. So check your stats.
I'm looking at it right now.
It's not. I'm telling you, it's in the top 50. It's absurd.
Okay, right now I'm up to 20. 29 is the Masters, right?
I'm telling you the World Series.
All right, 31 is Daytona 500.
Certainly that.
All right, here we go. Warriors Thunder, college football, the Preakness at 39.
And he's gotten to a baseball game. Maybe they just don't include
42.
Baseball.
MLB All-Star game is 42.
And I know the World Series had more people watching than the All-Star game.
So it seems like this has to be some kind of mistake because it's not a single World Series game on here.
So that seems incorrect. That was this list before the
Sports Media Watch.
When was that released?
This list was released on. Let the fantasy executive go up here.
Before the World Series started.
This was in July.
Villanova.
Great list.
Villanova UNC was number 20.
The list is before. Is in July.
Why is the list? And every list on every other list on here is in July too. Why are they not? They don't keep after July. They don't keep it.
Why do you have to groan when we talk NASCAR?
Because people don't like NASCAR.
It's boring. You're talking about yourself.
I wasn't groaning. I just said you're quietly. I didn't say a word.
No, you said, well, not NASCAR.
Corey's
totally inaccurate that people don't care about it.
Don't put words in my mouth. All I said was the World Series was going to be more watched than the Daytona 500. That's all I said.
Yes. The Cubs and
Daytona 500 was, what, number 31?
But the Cubs and the Indians, Game 7 of the World Series was the fifth most watched sporting event of 2016.
I think.
The most watched MLB telecast since 1991.
Yeah. Jack Morris.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's because every year I look at those ratings and baseball, like the All-Star game, is like the highest, and it's not even in the top 35.
Yeah.
Washington and Dallas on Thanksgiving was in the top 10.
Oh, yeah. Big game.
Because people love the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, everybody sits around Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
It's not, you know.
Wait, what was the highest rated Cowboys game?
Highest rated was Thanksgiving.
What number is that?
It was number 9. That game when the Seahawks and Vikings in the NFC wild card was number 8. When the Vikings choked it away.
I got number 9 Chiefs Patriots.
I have the whole season list now, Scott. You're looking at the one I was looking at earlier.
Okay.
Yeah, I got the whole season list right here.
Oh, so far, yeah.
The Olympics did pretty good, too, this year. I mean, in 2016. And I've never really been a guy that watches the Olympics. What about you, Greg?
I like the volleyball.
Oh, yeah, I can't. It's other things you can watch, though.
I like the Olympics.
I used to like the boxing back in the day, but they don't even put it on no more.
Nah, the boxing was good. And they don't put it on no more. Man, you know, it's tough.
Well, yeah.
It's tough. People, like, sending their amateur athletes to the Olympics, you know how much goes into that? You know what I mean? People, families have to come together with all this money to send kids to the Olympics. It's crazy. I read a couple stories about people sending their children to the Olympics. You got to, like, take out loans to get to the Olympics. I would tell my child, you better win. We going out here spending those money. You better come back with a gold medal.
Washington Cowboys most watched regular season NFL games since 1995. Wow.
Yeah, it's big. When the Cowboys are good, the ratings go up. That's for sure. There you go. Tony. You have the number 5 pick in this draft for first NFC draft of the year. And I wanted to go over the number 5 pick in the FSTA draft. We've already done that, right? We've already gone over Charlie's team. So, in order to help you, Tony, would you prefer we go over number 4, or number 6 today?
Let's go four.
Go number 4. The players that would theoretically be taken before you get an opportunity. The number 4.
Well, before or.
Or after.
You know, on the even. Yeah, in the even numbers, we go the other way.
Yeah, before or after. So we begin with the first overall pick, Jose Altuve. Now, Tony, you have been on record saying you kind of like the idea of starting your team, Trey Turner and Corey Seager, because you're able to get your second baseman, your shortstop, no big deal, and done after the first two rounds. Well, Steve Gardner, USA Today, with the 4th pick, he did just that, not with Seager and Turner, but with Jose Altuve and Francisco Lindor. So I have to imagine you endorsed that strategy as well.
I wouldn't take Altuve. The one problem that I have with him is I don't know if the power is real. Like, that number really sprouted up last year. So what I would do in that situation, I would pick maybe an Arenado or Chris Bryant there and then come back and grab a pitcher in the next round and then try to get stolen bases in round three. Someone like a Jonathan Villar, I would try to go and grab in round three. So I don't like Altuve because of the power situation, but it's not a bad pick.
Yeah, VR did go in round three, which, you know, was totally on point. Like, Rusty Ryle and I have had this debate more and more than once on our show. You know, I'm kind of with Tony on a I don't want to take Altuve that early. I just don't believe that the power is, like, there's got to be some regression. It's like somewhat of an outlier there. I'm expecting maybe more 15, 16. I don't want to pay up for that kind of power speed combination when the power could maybe only be 15 home runs. So I'm kind of with Tony there. It's like, I know we're going to get to somebody else, but to me, there's another guy that jumps out at me. He's much better power speed combination on the board, and it's very rare in his position.
Nobody's going to have more hits than Altuve, though.
Yeah, but hits is not a category in, you know, 5x5 Roto.
I feel you on that one, but yeah. If he has the most hits, then that makes
he's going to have a high batting average. Yeah, but other guys are going to have batting at high batting averages, but I feel they're more guaranteed
when you
to
look
give
at,
me pop.
This is my thing. When you look at the tools, he looks like the best offensive player in the game.
I don't think he's the best fantasy player on the board to me at that point.
I'm cool with that. I'm just playing devil's advocate here. But I'm looking at his skill set, his numbers. He's the best offensive player.
Like Tony said, it's not a bad pick, but it's not a pick that I'm going to make.
To be honest, as we said last night, I talked about Jose Altuve, right? Like, the home runs have gone up every year, essentially. RBI is up every year. Runs scored up every year. Like, all these numbers are increasing, the power numbers. The stolen bases are actually what has gone down. He only stole 30 bases last year. Now, is that a trend you expect to see continue, Scott? Stolen bases down, power staying around that 25 number?
I feel like the speed's going to go back up a little and the power's going to come down. It's a little regress to the mean. Rusty and I disagree on this because Rusty says, like, you know, sometimes with a player, like, the power is like the last thing to come as the player continues to evolve as a major leaguer. And while I respect that, I just disagree with it. You know, it's like looking at what I'm seeing, I think there's more of a 15-homer guy.
And that's not unfair, right? Like, if you look at his projections for next year, he's pretty much projected for about 15 home runs, but 15, 16, 18, depending on where you're looking. A 15, 30 guy, I mean, that's a pretty good guy to get.
Yeah, but well, here's the thing. If we had 20 people that hit over 20, if we had 100 people that hit over, that hit
20 home runs.
Hit 20 home runs last year.
Right.
If we had that number again this year, Altuve is going to be one of those guys.
Sure.
So, yeah.
But I don't know if you guys want to move on to other players or not. Cool, you just want to keep it where it is,
we're having
Greg.
A conversation,
but, you
Scott.
Know, it's like, I'd rather have Goldschmidt. You know, he's going to steal a lot of bases for a first baseman, and I feel like the power is guaranteed.
I would not rather have Goldschmidt than Altuve. All right, who do you think steals more bases between Altuve and Goldschmidt?
I think Altuve does, but I think I get more power for Goldschmidt.
Agree.
And I feel like it's, if I'm splitting hairs, it's more rare at first base.
The stolen bases are, but you're also grabbing a second baseman that has legitimate power here, too, right? You're getting 15
well,
runs.
That's the thing. What is the level of legitimate power, though, I'm getting? You know?
Well,
I could be getting twice as many home runs from Goldschmidt.
You could be.
That's where the difference lies.
But, I mean, he had 15 home runs in 2015, 24 home runs in 2016, right? Like,
yeah.
Do we assume the power is close? I know you assume the power is closer to 15 than 24,
yeah. I'm
right?
not assuming it goes up. Yeah.
Agreed with that, right? Mm-hmm. Now, Goldschmidt sold 32 bases last year.
Yeah.
We assume that goes down into 20 to 25, realistically, right?
Yeah.
So you're looking at a 30-20 guy, just say that, and then a 15-30 guy.
I'd rather have the guy with 30 homers.
It doesn't. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Me personally.
And that's fine.
What's his?
There's a lot of first basemen though.
What's his durability?
There's a lot of second basemen. I actually, when you look at it, right? If you don't pick Jose Altuve, at second base.
Yep.
You got a lot of guys that are second base eligible this year, more than I've ever seen.
Yeah.
There, like, I wouldn't mind waiting and getting a guy like Roughneck Odor.
Sure.
in my mock in the 15th round, I just got Logan Forsythe.
Yeah, so you have Altuve, you have Cano.
Sure.
Bryant Dozier coming off 40 home runs.
Yep.
Daniel Murphy playing a whole year. I had 25 home runs last year. DJ LeMahieu is another guy. Like, second base to me is the deepest it's been in a long time.
Okay.
What do you take in the
first base? And then first base has always been a power position.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at it last year as far as home runs go from the first base position. We had Edwin Encarnacion 42, Chris Cotta 41, who doesn't even have a team to play on, could get stuck in a platoon. Miguel Cabrera is there, Chris Davis is there, Freddie Freeman's there. Carlos Santana, Mike Napoli doesn't have a team as of yet. I think he'll be all right, though. I don't think he'll get stuck in a platoon. Rizzo. So I think the first base position there is power, and you do get deep. But I think second base is actually a position that has more people in it than we've had in a long time.
Then you look at Jose, though, since he's been a full-time player, he's not played no less than 147 games a season. That's got to count for something, too.
Which is why he's a first-round pick, I think. You know, durability is a skill if you own it, but it's not like Goldschmidt, he had the injury last year, but I think for most of his career he's been durable.
This is like a skill set with Altuve, would be able to stay.
To me, Goldschmidt, like when I could get 25 steals out of a first baseman.
That's crazy.
Get to 30 home runs. Four-category guy. You know, Altuve could be five-category, but again, that's just me. You know, everybody's different. You know, I'll take the 30 homers over the 15.
I mean, you can't go wrong with either player. Yeah. I'm just, you know, we're just having a discussion.
Yeah, you split hairs when you're talking about guys like this.
In the second round, you get, though, to Francisco Lindor. And Lindor, 15 homers last year. He had 19 stolen bases. Almost like a Jose Altuve light, if you will, right? In a way, less stolen bases. The power is a little bit less as well, although his power has gone up each of the past couple of years. You kind of know what you're getting. The average is a little bit less. He doesn't get as many hits naturally as a Jose Altuve. What do you think, Scotty? Francisco Lindor? Second round.
Steve Gardner's obviously trying to build his team in a certain way here, you know, like the combination of 15 homer guys with some speed. So if you're going to do that, I see where he's going. You know, with Lindor, I think from what we saw in the minor leagues, I think the power has actually been a little bit surprising. It's been a little bit more than we've expected. Me personally, I don't know if that was the way that I would go on the board. You know, I might have gone Syndergaard there. I don't know if I can vehemently argue with the pick. But I see what Tony's going with second base, though. It's like he took Altuve. It's like Cano is still there, you know?
Sure.
And it's like, you know, how can I go wrong with Cano?
Right.
With Dozier, I'll take a hit in batting average compared to Altuve, but the power is going to be monstrous.
Right.
It's interesting to me, Lindor. Lindor is way better at the major league level than he ever was offensively at the minor league level.
Yeah.
Now, this guy came up as a superstar defensive player. But the thing is, he's only 23, so that's why you can see the reasonable improvement from him from an offensive perspective. And he's hit 12 and 15 home runs. It wouldn't shock me if this kid moved it up to 20 home runs this year and has a 2020 season. I think he's a good pick at this point. Okay. I really was 100% wrong about him. I would have never been one of those guys drafting him the first two seasons.
Now, there you go. Obviously improved. And as Tony has said, just 23 years old. Definitely has the potential to be a 2020 guy.
You know, it's crazy. We've been doing these shows for so long. I remember when we were talking about Lindor as a prospect.
Sure.
From back in the day.
But wasn't that long ago.
When we were in the old studio. Yeah, that's true,
too.
You know what I mean? Still.
You know?
But now you see him getting the second round draft pick, you know what I mean? Could be possible 2020 guy.
Sure.
Power is not his game, but if you make a mistake, he can hit it out the ballpark.
Absolutely.
So,
here's the thing: you pass on Altuve. To Tony's point, you pass on Lindor, and you look at what Charlie Weegar did. He got Goldschmidt and Bumgarner, and then he still got his speed with VR in the third round.
Mm-hmm. We like Charlie's team.
Yeah,
we talk about Charlie's team and winning day when you was off. We was giving Charlie a little round of applause.
Yeah,
and I thought the Kemp pick was interesting because in my mock, I got him in the sixth round.
We looked at Charlie. We was talking about him taking Chapman in the sixth.
No,
kind of really the only thing that threw his team off.
Mm-hmm. Right.
When we come back, we talked about Nelson Cruz a lot yesterday, but now we're getting the catchers a bit, because Buster Posey, first catcher off the board, that was in the fourth round, and just two picks later, there went Gary Sanchez. Too early, too late for these catchers? What do we think? We break down Buster Posey, Steve Gardner's fourth round pick, coming up next. So one thing we have yet to discuss is the catcher position. Now, Scotty, he's been pretty much been on record. I watch Buster Posey better than everybody else. And Tony, we always talked about it a little bit yesterday. That what makes Buster Posey so good is that on days he doesn't catch, very often you will find him at first base. So not only is he putting up the numbers, but he's playing almost every day. That's what makes Posey so good. And he was Steve Gardner's fourth round pick. Now, is the fourth round the right spot, Tony, for Buster Posey?
Yeah, if you're going to jump in and you want Buster Posey, that's where you have to get him. He usually goes actually a little earlier than that. And just to point out, most catchers, like the good catchers, like the top-of-line catchers, catch about 120 games. Buster Posey played 146 last year, 150 the year before, 147. So you're getting these numbers, 95 RBIs, 80 RBIs. You'll never, good catchers get 60.
Yeah, absolutely. And absolutely. And then once Posey went off the board, then you had Gary Sanchez. And Gary Sanchez, to me, is one of the lightning rods of this draft. People look back last year, saw him hit, 20 home runs in a month or so. And people will believe, wow, this guy's unbelievable, right? And the other side is like, listen, this cannot happen again. We're not going to see that again. The average is not going to be as good. He's going to strike out more. Once he plays every day, things are going to change. He goes legitimately just two picks later. I know where Tony is on Gary Sanchez. Scott, where are you?
I think it's somewhere in the middle. Like, there's no way he can't just, obviously, people play fantasy baseball knows you can't project him over a full season, you know, to hit 40 homers just because of what he did last year. You know, baseball is a constant game of adjustments. You adjust to the pitchers, they adjust back to you if you're a hitter, and that's the way it's going to work. The power potential is obviously there, but over a full season, he's going to get more exposed. To me, and not personally, I don't jump in on guys like Posey and Sanchez, because you look at Posey, he's coming off of a season which the batting average was dropping. The power has been continually dropping. He's still better than anybody at the position, but I don't draft for position scarcity. I strip away the position. These are two best players left on the board. I don't necessarily think so. If I have to go somewhere, I go to Posey because he's safer. Sanchez has more upside, but you know, what do you get over a full season? In fantasy baseball, judging things over a half season or a quarter of a season or a third season is very dangerous. These wouldn't have been the guys I picked either, but, you know, obviously Posey, I go with what's more safer. I go with what's more proven.
Bust rate on 1 to 10, bust rate for Sanchez. 10 being high chance of bust.
4.
So I'll answer that question in 1 second. I'm not saying, you know, choose between Posey and Sanchez, because I think Posey's the obvious answer. That wasn't really the question so much as in Corey's correct question, right? Like, bust rate on Gary Sanchez, because, like,
there's no way I'm doing it in the fourth round.
Okay.
No way.
And I think that, like, a lot of people, we always talk about this, guys, everybody loves young players. You put them in a position, a scarce position in New York, right? We talked about Derek Jeter about an hour ago. Mm-hmm. Everything just gets pumped up here.
Yep.
And I think, who would you rather have, Tony? Because I'll talk about a guy we talked about yesterday. Gary Sanchez or Kyle Schwarber?
I'd rather go Gary Sanchez, to tell you the truth.
Okay.
Because I'm getting up a scarcer position, and I think there's a reasonable chance that they both could come out with the same numbers.
And I think so, too. So yeah. And one of the reasons, Scotty, that I like Sanchez, and I also put him at a low bust rate, we just talked about Posey, and this is 100% coming from Tony yesterday. We talked about Posey. One of the great things about him is how much he plays every day, right? He plays first base.
Right.
I think, as Tony said it, you're going to see this with Sanchez, too. He's going to play catcher every day, and the days he's not playing catcher, he's going to DH for this team. His bat's going to be too important.
His bat's going to be in there, yeah.
And that's what makes these two bet.
Holiday projected cleanup, yeah.
And that what makes this team so much better, or these two players so much better than the other catchers, including Jonathan Lucroy, including Wilson Contreras, Yasmani Grandal, Salvador Perez. These guys just catch. I know Perez plays every single day, but these guys just catch. Posey and Sanchez, they're going to play some position in that field or be in the lineup.
The bat's going to be in the lineup, so that helps, and that's the reason why they're being drafted this early.
And understandably so.
But now the thing about it is,
I don't think the fourth round's all that early, to be honest with you.
But I think, the thing about it is, I think it comes down to, in the style that most of us play in two catcher leagues, is do you get in on the catcher early? That seems to be what the debate is when it comes to the catchers.
Right. Do
you get in on the catcher early?
If you are, that's where you take them.
But I also don't find the fourth round to be overly early.
Let me ask you a question.
We're at the end of the fourth round here. It's not like we're taking him in the second or third.
Like Corey talks about. It's philosophy. If you're in on a catcher, it's not too early. For me, even before this year, I've never been a catcher early guy. Right. So for me, it's too early, period.
Would you draft both of them in a two-catcher league?
No.
Why?
I'm not going to draft one catcher early. It's like,
you said you stripped the position off and you draft by the stats.
Yeah.
Why not leave a draft with Posey and Sanchez?
Because Sanchez is too unproven for me to do that. And I can't strip the position away. I'm not going to spend on two catchers. You know, it's fundamentally, it's like Posey statistically is not the best player on the board at that point.
All right. So after Cespedes, who I think you'll say is the best position player on the board, right? Is Posey not next then?
Might get more home runs and RBIs and same batting average out of Cargo.
You might, or you might get hurt and miss the entire season.
True.
But like you could absolutely make an argument that Posey's the next best player on this board.
Here's the argument.
What do you project for Abreu, though?
Abreu, we have seen have power. I mean,
Posey's an under 20 home run hitter now.
Sure.
And under 300.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Barely.
Barely.
Matt Kemp went almost a round later.
Not almost a round later. He went like six picks later.
Yeah. Half a round later.
Right. But all I'm saying is, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. You can make an argument that Posey's the next best player on the board, is all I'm saying. Right? Like, the argument can be made. Whether you agree or not, that's fine. That's totally your prerogative. Right. I'm not arguing like your opinion, and that totally up to you. Right. The argument can be made, in my opinion. Posey's the next, and then maybe Sanchez is right in that conversation
afterwards.
If you
strip away catcher, he's the next best player on the board.
He's in the argument, I think. And then, but you don't want to, but like, to me, I don't think we should strip away catcher. Like, I know position scarcity, like, you don't believe in position scarcity. I do. Right? It's different philosophies.
Right. It's different philosophies. Totally different philosophies. The way I look at it, I'm not going to do a position scarcity pick early, so they get different. Yeah.
But like you say that, but you're also not going to pick 17 first basemen in a row, right?
No.
So there you go.
I just feel crazy. Like of the guys on the board there, he doesn't give me the best numbers,
which is fine.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think like to say that we don't look at position scarcity. Like
I'm saying, I don't make.
But
a
you
pick.
Won't take four. You know, you won't pick four first basemen if they're the top player on the board because you can't play them all, right?
Right. Right.
So,
but what I'm saying is, I'm not going to take Posey or Sanchez in the fourth round because I'm worried about catcher. I'll wait on the position and take a lesser player.
Tony, where are you on that?
See, I wouldn't do this, but here's the debate. Here's the thing. If you look at it from a statistical standpoint, what Steve Gardner, but when you jumped in Buster Posey, this is probably a good move to come back with Gary Sanchez. I look at it like this. He's going to get 50 to 60 RBIs on the catches, on the other two catches that the rest of the guys have in the league.
Sure.
He's going to get 10 home runs more than all the other catchers in the league,
mm-hmm.
You know, catcher combinations in the league. He is also going to get 40 runs scored than all the other catchers in the league, and his batting average is going to be 60 points better than some of the teams in this league. So I think it's smart from a statistical standpoint. Now, the negative is if these guys don't play first base, they don't play DH, and they only catch, and they don't get enough games to offset, you know, instead of picking an outfielder or a second baseman or shortstop, which I'm not worried about. I think they do. I like what he did here. I wouldn't do it. I think there's a lot of risk there. Anytime you pick a catcher, there's also a greater risk of injury. Yeah. And I wouldn't do it, but I like what he did here. I think it's outside the box thinking, and I think there's a reasonable chance it pays off.
Yeah, there's a narrative on Posey right now where he talks about the breakdown where people are starting to talk about his age and, you know, all the wear and tear behind the plate, et cetera. The batting average is dropping. The power is dropping. I'm not saying that's my necessarily outlook. I think Posey's still going to be a solid catcher, but I think there are analysts out there who are kind of worried about his age and his durability.
Absolutely.
When you catch dropping long, power numbers.
Absolutely. Totally reasonable. Totally makes sense to me as well. All right.
So could you make a case for Sanchez over Posey in that regard?
No, in my opinion, because, as you said, too much. We've seen Posey do it year after year after year.
Right.
And we know how many games he plays. And I understand it's a little bit of a drop. Sanchez is unbelievable 2 months. Right. You know, I personally would have to see more.
Yeah.
Personally. All right, we'll come back. Steve Gardner's first pitcher came in the fifth round, and I like it. We'll explain and break it down next. You know this about me. I want pitching early. I need to grab my ace, and then I'll build around. Like, I want two aces. So I wouldn't necessarily, like Gardner did, wait until the fifth round for pitcher. Like, Scotty, you mentioned before, like, a certain spot, with the second round, like, instead of Lindor, you would have taken Syndergaard. And there's a very good chance I would have done the same thing.
Right.
Right. But I also would have done what he did in the fifth round, which is grab Jake Arrieta. And Arrieta...
I would. Right.
Because I want two stud pitchers. It's very important to me to have that. And Jake Arrieta, bit of a down year comparatively to his Cy Young Award winning year the year before. Arrieta, and I believe in it, right? Pitching for the money this year. Is he going to stop going out? Is he going to do whatever? Who knows? But Arrieta, contract year with the Cubs, and this is his chance to break the bank. We all know that about him. Fifth round. It's his first pitcher. What do you think? I know, Scotty, you had a decision. What do you think of Jake Arrieta?
See, I struggle with Arrieta because I had this decision in my keeper league where you can keep more than three guys. It depends on salary. I could only keep Syndergaard or Arrieta. And to me, it's clearly Syndergaard. But,
sure. You
know, you look at Arrieta versus anybody else, and there were velocity issues last year. You know, that's a concern. The K per 9 went from 9.28 to 8.67, and the walks per 9 went to 1.89 to 3.47.
Absolutely.
And the HR fly ball rate jumped. Mm-hmm. The strand rate, he couldn't keep up from 2015. It went from 80 to 74.
More along his career line.
Yeah, the BABIP was pretty much the same, but the FIP was 3.52. It's just like... Arrieta just like he started to show some signs there. That, you know, that 2015 was a big outlier there. So if you're okay with more of the numbers than what you saw last year as your second pitcher, then it's an okay pick.
My thing is this: are we worried about the workload with him?
The amount of, you see that's a good thing because you're talking about
the innings.
You're talking about the combined amount of innings in the last
postseason,
3 years.
All of that,
right? That's a good point too. Plus the postseason.
So it could be an innings thing with this dude. He could be starting.
But you're still talking about
tire.
Him, like. But you're still talking about him here as well. Your number two pitcher.
I don't want him as my ace.
Yeah,
that's how I feel about it.
He waited too long. I can't. Arrieta's more of an ace name than the ace numbers are there right now. I'm okay with him as my number two.
I don't think it's realistic, though, that he's going to be number two in a lot of drafts.
I agree.
Right.
You'd have to go pitcher two and four.
That's what I'm saying,
and then,
yeah.
You know, the offense there. So he's a guy that has shown that he's done in the past, right? And you could do a lot worse than starting off with this guy as the pitcher here. Like, I don't think this is the end of it all. He's a 30-year-old pitcher, which isn't old. I mean, last year we look at the numbers, right? 3.10, and he almost had a K per inning. Like, what's wrong with that?
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing wrong with that. It just, are we thinking that he's going to regress just because? Or this is just like he's not a top-tier guy and he's going in round five?
Basically, what it is, you know, he went from elite to like, you know, very good. And as long as you're okay with that, you know, it depends whether you're okay with that. It's like, again, it's like Greg talks about. It's like, what's your philosophy? It's like...
Well, I can explain why I went from elite to very good, and it might be bad luck. So, basically, the Chicago Cubs, his home run to fly ball rate was 4% in 2014. Yeah. 2015 was 7%, then it was 11%.
11, yeah.
If that corrects itself, right there is the difference in the ERA.
Sure. Absolutely. Jake Arrieta was the ninth pitcher off the board in the FSTA, right? So he is a top 12 pitcher according to, you know, this draft, according to the experts in this draft.
SP1.
That sounds about right to me. Like I would, like I said to you before, yeah. I would love to have him as a number two, but I don't know I don't know how realistic it is. Yeah. He is still an SP1 though, right? Like,
right.
Like I think the numbers indicate that, and as you see. After Gardner takes Arrieta, like there is a small pitcher run where three or four pitchers go, and he comes back to wrestling and gets another one.
Here's something else, too, and you're speaking to this as well. He threw his fastball more, 15% more of the time last year, and threw the cutter 12%. So there was kind of some speculation about, like, you know, the velocity was down, and he had to make an adjustment.
Sure.
Or he was hurt. It's one or the other.
Yeah. Well, if he was hurt, he pitched damn well for a guy who was hurt.
Well, the problem is the cutter usually leads to injuries, and when you see a guy lay off that, that's generally a lot of times a consensus.
Exactly. You also saw, I'm sorry, Corey.
That's all good.
Going to the tire narrative, you also saw his numbers, you know, kind of really all go up. In a negative fashion from the first half to the second half, right? Like the ERA jumped an entire point from the first half to the second half, from 268 to 369. So I think right. That's pretty interesting. Allowed the same amount of earned runs, actually. Both halves pitched 20 more innings in the first half than the second half. The averages are pretty the same. I think Jake Arrieta is going to be fine. Tony exactly pointed out how that ERA can come back down. Like I said before, I believe in Arrieta. To me, amazing starting pitcher too. If it happens, I don't think it does. I think he's in our SP1.
Would you rather have?
He's still looking at 18-8, 3-10.
Right.
He's not whack. He's not.
We're setting
trash.
The expectations so high because of the previous year.
If he was down, if he was at 2.99, which is right, 0.11,
sure.
We would all say, oh, he's an elite pitcher. Yep. In this. It's just because he's 0.10 over.
Which is what, one run a game? You know, one run here and there, right?
One run, probably two runs in a whole season difference.
Okay, so there you go.
Who would you rather have, this guy, Arrieta, or Johnny Cueto?
I would rather have Arrieta.
That's a great question.
I'd rather have Arrieta than Cueto.
So Cueto's a good pitcher, right? There's no doubt about it. The one problem why he's not
an elite
pitcher is the strikeouts. Yeah, the strikeouts set him back. He's a guy that actually excelled in a great hitter's ballpark in Cincinnati. Now he's in he's in San Francisco, his great pitcher's ballpark, which actually helps him out. I think I would go. Arrieta has a chance to strike out a guy per inning. I don't get that with Johnny Cueto, so I would actually go there. And the other narrative, and he can't chase wins, and we all say that. But the Cubs are going to win 100 games.
Yeah, yep. That's the thing about it. I was thinking too, the fact that the Cubs are
can't chase wins, but the wins will be there for the team.
Exactly. Yeah. Fantasy best friend forever, Matt Modica, just tweeted at us. He said, Arrieta's cutter and slider usage saw a sharp decline. Tony, you mentioned that cutter does lead to injury. Maybe it declined because he had some pain.
Yeah.
Like Tony
and
said.
And that's every time you see that. That's the one thing you get concerned about. He laid off it. There was no, you know, he's had the time off. There was no surgery. There's no corrections, anything there. So I expect him to get back out there and go back to the pitches there. In the second half, those numbers, like you said, are not that far off. One or two bad innings. It changed the whole thing.
Totally. Continuing down Mr. Gardner's draft here, Hanley Ramirez, the first baseman. Mr. Gardner, yes. Hanley Ramirez, the first baseman. Real interesting name. I own Hanley Ramirez. He was one of these guys last year that I actually sought out because I thought Hanley Ramirez is a really nice value last season because he was going to play first base every day. He had a position his second year in Boston, or back in Boston, I should say. And I thought he would be comfortable. And he certainly went through slumps But overall on the year, it was a nice year for him. He batted 286, finished with 30 home runs, 111 ribbies, 9 stolen bases. I mean, that's a good year for Hanley Ramirez. The OBP was a fantastic 361. Doesn't really strike out all that much. So I like Hanley Ramirez. Do you like him in this spot, Tony?
I like him in this spot, but there's a big red flag here.
Okay.
I can tell you everything about every player. And all statistically based, right?
Sure.
Here's the thing you can't explain. What a player does when he no longer has to go out in the field and he's the DH. People don't realize how hard it is to sit in that dugout for 9 innings, do something you're not accustomed to. I had this conversation with Cliff Floyd. Cliff Floyd said he was the worst DH in the world. He would get anxiety waiting to do something. And he used to try to go to batting cage, but he could never felt comfortable being a DH. Ramirez will be in the DH role for the first time. And we've seen other players decline going to DH. And a lot of people think it helps the players, but they're just not used to it. Baseball players are creatures of habit. This guy's 33 years old. For 25 years, he's been going out, playing the field, and then coming in and hitting. Now it's all taken away. That's the weird thing that you don't know and you can't explain statistically.
Yeah, to Tony's point, like following Hanley over the years and asking beat guys and, you know, people inside the game in Boston about Hanley, it's like, you know, from a mental standpoint, he can always kind of be up, down, you know, like he would embrace things at first and, you know, then kind of fall off. You know, I think Tony makes a good point, you know, when we talk about the intangibles. I think statistically there's also some question about whether he can continue to elevate the ball like he did last year and, you know, have that 30 home run year again.
As long as there is,
I see him.
He's playing. I think he's going to be satisfied. He'll play good. He'll be committed as long as the team is winning. He likes to play for winning teams. As long as they're winning, he'll be involved. He'll be into it. So I think that 30 home runs is it might be a stretch again this year.
And last year was the first time he played 140 games since 2012.
Right. Let me ask a dumb question about, and this is more for Tony, the Red Sox fan. Why wouldn't they just put Hanley at third and let Sandoval DH? Like, why do they want that fat guy in the field?
That's a great question. Well, Hanley's very tough.
Yeah,
very tough defensively. You know what's crazy about Hanley? Sometimes the motivation always comes into question with this guy.
Yep.
I went to a game last year in April in Atlanta, and I seen him before the game. He was chiseled like you wouldn't believe.
Right.
He looked like he spends all day in a weight room, and I'm like, man, that's Hanley Ramirez. He's used to the guy with the baggy uniform, feeling like he's not going to run after a ball that got past him. And he's just so bad defensively. I think they want to take him off the field, and they want, at 33 years of age, keep this guy healthy.
Okay.
I think if everything goes right, this is the part, when you get to this part of the draft, this is what you do. Who is the guy that, if everything goes right, could be a first-round pick? Well, if I look at Hanley Ramirez, he could hit 25 home runs and hit 300. That's the guy.
And more to Tony's points about his mental state, it's like when they put him in the outfield, it totally screwed with his head.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
That's with his offense.
Yeah. That's why I loved him last year at first base, where he was going to be more comfortable. Absolutely, no question.
You heard all the positive narratives, like, okay, he's not shortstop anymore. Durability is going to be less of an issue.
Right.
He couldn't handle the ball off the wall.
Right, he had no idea.
Yeah.
This is a much better position for him in a good year. Tony's right, though. He'll be mostly a DH year in 2017. How will that mess with him? That's another variable.
How will he? Yeah.
It's another variable for Hanley Ramirez.
Do
you feel like I could see with somebody like Hanley, like somebody saying, wow, they're putting me in DH. Am I less important to the team? Have I been downgraded?
So it's hard
have
to
I been demoted?
I would think it's hard to think that after how big of a name and persona David Ortiz
about to
is
say
he's
stepping into David Ortiz's shoes, so that's kind of like, oh, I get to you know,
David Ortiz,
I get to be David Ortiz. You know what I mean?
Or he could look at it this way: well, I've been pushed from shortstop to the outfield to first base to totally off the diamond.
Well, if I was John Farrell, I would just bring over a copy of his $22 million check and tell him that's how much I think.
This is
Corey. Who would you rather have, Hanley Ramirez or Chris Davis? Chris Davis went two picks after Hanley Ramirez.
Chris Davis is legendary because I one of my first fantasy baseball title was won because of Chris Davis. Oh, that's a tough call right there, Greg. I guess that's why you asked it. I think I would go with Chris Davis.
Because to answer Tony's question from just a second ago, at this spot, you want a guy that could wind up in the first round. Chris Davis could hit 50 home runs.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That's a guy that can hit 40 to 50 home runs. Hanley Ramirez is not doing that.
The big fella, Chris Davis, you know what the power
but
is.
But Hanley Ramirez is average maybe 100 points higher than Chris Davis.
Chris Davis could also hit 220.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
So I'm not going to draft anybody in the first round that's going to give me a 220 average.
Well, you're not drafting the first round. You're drafting the sixth
round.
I'm
talking about returning first round value.
But he could also hit 250.
He could hit 270.
Right, 250, right. I'm saying he hit 220 last year, the year before. What?
262.
So there you go. So, he hits 262 and 40 home runs, you're thrilled.
I'm safely going to say 240 and 40.
Great.
Yeah, I'd probably rather have that.
Okay. It's probably 230 and 40, though. That's the thing about it. So
I'm putting it in the middle of what the last 2 years.
I think I got to go Chris Davis, bro. I just think something about Chris Davis' numbers a little bit safer. Hanley's a wild card.
Yeah.
Hanley's 2 years removed from hitting 249.
He's a wild card. Yeah.
But like you said, his head was messed up in the outfield. Tony, where are you on this one?
I would go Chris Davis. I just think there's more upside there. But to be honest with you, the Hanley Ramirez pick of the 325 home runs, you get two or three of those guys on your roster.
You win.
Then later in the draft, you could pick like a home run guy that has a poor average.
Chris Carter.
It won't hurt you.
Adam
average.
Chris Carter.
So when it sets up your team better.
Sure.
If you pick Hanley Ramirez
earlier, right? That's a really good point. Tony, Hanley Ramirez or Evan Longoria?
Yeah, you know it's Hanley, and it's crazy. I'm a guy that is not high on Longoria as I should be. He had an outstanding season last year. He plays on a team with a poor offense. He plays on a team in a bad ballpark. And he is on the backside of his career for sure and has to play the field still. 31 years of age, you wouldn't think it. Last year, though, he really came back after I thought was some pretty average seasons for him. He had 36 home runs, coming off 21 and 22 home runs and 270 and 253 batting average. So I'm a little hesitant there. I'm not a total believer in the 36 home runs. And Logan Forsythe, another offensive weapon gone. That's not real, and it's not a great offense to start with. So I'm going with Ramirez there. But to be honest, I'm not a Longoria guy.
Okay, Scotty.
Yeah, I'd probably go Longoria. The one thing cinching it for me is that 160 games played in each of the last four seasons.
Big number.
Yeah.
What about you, Corey?
Hanley.
How come?
I just think it goes back to what Tony said. I'm not a Longoria guy. The injury is the durability. I think you just give me a healthy Hanley, even though he's a wild card. I'm gonna go Hanley.
We'll take a break when we come back. Who is the next pitcher that Steve Gardner took? We'll tell you. We'll break it down. Come up next. Lightning rod of a name. In fantasy drafts 2017, another veteran, right? A lot of veteran talk here with Chris Davis and Evan Longoria, Hanley Ramirez, Justin Verlander. Now, Justin Verlander was a name that everyone kind of thought was on the decline the last couple of years, and I don't remember if it was you, Tone, or you, Scotty. Maybe it was Ronis even, I don't know. But what you guys told me, like, listen, if you just look into Justin Verlander, and, like, you just see, since he got healthy the second half of 2015, like, he's been really a much different pitcher. And the numbers last year certainly indicate that, right?
I think it was me that noted, like, I think he was, like, the winningest, like, the best pitcher, like, down the second half of the season.
Okay, there you go. The K per 9 over 10 last year. Finishes 16-9 with an ERA of 3. Like I said, 10 strikeouts per 9 innings. The BABIP was a little bit lower than we have seen in the past for him, which is mildly concerning. Walk rate a little bit, a little bit up, not really terribly.
The strand rate was his highest in like 6 years.
And the strand rate close to 80%, almost 80 there. Obvious question is, what do we expect of Justin Verlander this year?
I think he's remade himself as a pitcher, though, and he's healthy. He's thrown his changeup less than he did earlier in his career during his dominance year. And during his dominant years, he had one of the best changeups in the game. I think he's a very smart pitcher, and a lot of veterans do this, know how to remake themselves later in their career. So I expect a bit of a drop-off, but no major precipitous fall-off.
Tony?
The one thing that's alarming to me is the rise in velocity last season, which we hadn't seen there. And if that's maintainable, I think it's a good pick where he picked him because he's shown the ability. He's getting them late. I think if he didn't have a couple off years, he would have never lasted this long in the draft. So I think there's a gamble to it. I just don't think people need to go. He's getting drafted earlier in the NFBC draft, and I think that people are making a mistake there. The K per 9 at the 10.04, I mean, that's elite. That's an elite number. But I just don't get how a pitcher basically lost his fastball and then brought it back last year to 93.5.
Yeah, that K rate, it was his highest since 2009.
He started getting better in the second half of the 2015 season, though, when he started to get fully healthy. So once they had that core surgery last season, he came back. He had some secondary stuff that looked pretty good. So that's what the deal is with Justin Verlander. But I don't know. It caught me by surprise last year.
When you see a 34-year-old pitcher, right, improve, they usually go the other way. They go from a high-velocity guy to a pitcher. He went back to velocity.
Yeah, he stopped throwing the changeup as much as he did. Yeah.
We'll talk more Justin Verlander and find out what closer Steve Gardner took. Coming up next, the Roto Experts.